This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Matt Wells. In this week's programme, a world poetry champion from Sudan highlights the troubled history of her homeland, Darfur, in verse. And in neighbouring South Sudan, a revitalised peace deal is crucial to ending the political and humanitarian crisis. We hear from the top UN official there who's been at high-level meetings here in New York. But first, ongoing violence against civilians and aid workers trying to protect them has left the Central African Republic, or CAR, on the brink of a humanitarian crisis. That's the view of Joseph Iganji, who heads the UN Humanitarian Affairs Office, OCHA, in the capital, Bangui. Around 23,000 civilians have fled into the bush in western areas of the country, and the instability and violence has led to a temporary suspension of all relief activities. Christina Silveiro asked Mr. Iganji to describe conditions on the ground in CAR.
The situation in the country, in the Central African Republic, is on the brink of a humanitarian crisis. In the western part of the country, we have got armed conflict that is going on, and we in various towns, including Bukaranga, where we have seen more than 20,000 people displaced and into the forest, and they are deprived of their assistance. It is important to note that women and children are the most affected during this conflict, and when they go to the forest and have got nothing to eat, exposed to mosquitoes, we are likely to see children coming up with acute respiratory infection, malaria. But at the end of the day, the humanitarians who are supposed to cater for these people have already relocated to Sudan for insecurity. And it's for this reason that we are worried that this situation is really getting out of hand, and it needs particular attention, close attention, to ensure that it comes to a stop. Bukaranga is not the only town. We have various towns, even in the east, ranging from Alindao, Mobaye, Lingala, Bangassou, Zemio, where humanitarians have been relocated for security reasons, and we have left thousands of people there, IDPs, without assistance.
So you say that the population and humanitarian workers are fleeing the rise in violence. How do you explain this rise in violence?
Actually, what is happening is that we have had attacks on humanitarian convoys. We have had attacks on our compound and also attacks on our bases and even the humanitarians themselves. It is important to note that even as I'm talking to you, I have a colleague, a humanitarian, who was shot in Bukaranga and is fighting for his life in hospital as I'm talking to you now.
What is it that you're calling for?
We are calling for respect of international humanitarian law and also for an immediate access to the humanitarian aid workers so that they can be able to provide assistance to the needy people. We are also calling for the international community not to forget the crisis in Central African Republic, because if this crisis is forgotten, the international community will be forced to come in future with more resources in order to deal with the situation. Central African Republic should not be forgotten.
Imtithal, or Emmy Mahmoud, writes poetry to draw attention to the war-torn Darfur region of Sudan, as well as the global refugee crisis. The Sudanese poet, who currently lives in the United States, recently visited El Fasher, Darfur. Brought up in the region, which has suffered years of conflict, she left Sudan as a toddler for Yemen and reached the United States in 1998. Emmy first discovered slam poetry while attending Yale University and holds two world championship titles. To mark UNHCR's announcement of the 1 millionth South Sudanese refugee entering Uganda in August this year, Emmy wrote the poem Head Over Heels. She spoke to Adam Ahmed from the Joint African Union UN Mission in Darfur, UNAMID.
The first time I wrote a poem, I was 7 years old. Wow. And my teacher said that a poem is something that rhymes about something you care about. I wrote this poem. Lions are light brown. I think they like to sit down. And when I was 10 and 11, it was the first time I started writing about the situation in Darfur. And then when I was in college, when I was 19, I discovered spoken word poetry, the style of poetry I use now. You use your whole body, you use the whole human being to speak.
Is there any poet you follow as an example?
My mom and dad are both writers, and my sister also. They write to express themselves. My dad writes plays, and my mom writes poetry, and my sister writes poetry. So my family is the inspiration for me.
Amy, I recall that at some time back, you have been awarded doing this poetry. Can you tell us what happened?
In 2015, I became the international champion for poetry. So I became the world champion of spoken word poetry. And then in 2016, I became the woman champion. I was so surprised, but I was so happy because to me, it was important to know that the world cared about my family, cared about the people that I love, because that's what I write most about the people that show me how to love more every day.
Now, if you could just say some of the poets.
Yes, I would love to. We could do a more recent one.
Okay.
So this goes out to all of my family and to all the people in Darfur who think that we don't remember. It's called Head Over Heels. They hand me the microphone as my shoulders sink under the weight of this dress. The woman says, "The 1 millionth refugee just left South Sudan. Can you comment?" I feel my feet rock back and forth on the heels my mother bought, begging the question, do we stay or is it safer to choose flight? My mind echoes through the numbers. 1 million gone, 400,000 dead in Darfur, 2 million displaced, and this lump takes over my throat as if each of those bodies just found a grave right here in my esophagus. Our once country all north and south and east and west so restless, the Nile couldn't hold us together, and you asked me to summarize.
Thank you. When you mentioned that the Nile cannot unite us.
I think what people don't realize here in Darfur or in Sudan is that even us who left Sudan, even us who left Darfur, Sudan and Darfur and you guys here is like the most important thing. Because even when I left here, everything that we do outside is with the memory and the love of Sudan.
Only an internationally recognized and functioning peace agreement can end the suffering of millions in South Sudan. That's the firm view of the head of the UN peacekeeping mission in the country, David Shearer, who was in New York this week on behalf of UNMISS as world leaders debated how to help the world's youngest country recover from its conflict-driven humanitarian crisis. There are 2 million South Sudanese refugees and nearly 2 million displaced by fighting between political rivals. Mr. Shearer and his peacekeeping force are protecting more than 200,000 civilians at sites across the country. We sat down together in the studio here in New York.
The key thing is obviously a peace agreement and getting a peace agreement forward. I mean, the humanitarian situation is a function of the conflict. This is not about drought, it's actually about conflict. And the conflict has displaced a third of the population of South Sudan, which is 4 million people effectively. So resolving that conflict and getting a peace agreement will ultimately resolve the humanitarian crisis that we're faced with at the moment. And to get that peace agreement across the line, you need to have the agreement of not only the United Nations, but also the African Union and the regional leaders as well. The neighbouring states to South Sudan, if they can put pressure on South Sudan and the various warring parties, then you have a much better chance of moving forward. And that's what's so good about this week in UN, at the UN, because it brings those people together and they can focus on the issue together.
What do you think needs to happen for the rival factions in South Sudan's leadership and the militias that they control to stop ignoring the plight of their own people?
It is a question of leadership, and it's a question of these leaders actually looking beyond their own ambitions and looking to the people. I mean, South Sudan is the newest country here in the General Assembly. It's been very disappointing to see just how after 6 years of independence it just hasn't moved on in terms of fulfilling the promise and the prospects of the future that we thought it was going to have.
The ethnic rivalries that have resulted in some questioning whether or not a genocide may occur in South Sudan, they've been going on for a long time, as well as disputes over land and cattle in particular. What can the UN really do to change that reality?
Well, actually, we're doing quite a lot. We've got 17 bases across the country, and from those bases we reach out into all sorts of different communities. In a number of the communities, we've brought people, tribes, cattle keepers, I mean, all sorts of people together, and we've resolved conflicts. By doing that, we've saved hundreds of people from going to war with each other. Now, that doesn't make any headlines, but it's really important stuff that we're doing on the ground with these people.
So there are grounds for optimism, even if the progress is sort of incremental and not being noticed as much as perhaps you'd like?
Yeah, no, at a subnational level, I think there's been a lot of work that's been done. At a national level, we've still got some way to try and piece together the bits and to get that agreement across the line.
On Miss Chief, David Shearer talking to me earlier. You've been listening to UN and Africa, and you can follow more of our programmes at radio.un.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Matt Wells.